If there's £8,000 floating around from the government, why is that not shared 50-50 between the provider? Who's deciding that that all goes to provider?
Most, certainly our ones, you know, we've worked out, we get about £40-odd a day.
Self-taught, you know, it gives you the skill to be able to copy something. Yeah. It's not until really you're exploring the different types of people, the different environments, that you build those soft skills and the safety aspects of that.
But for the EPAs, is that something that then you're paid by the training provider to do the EPAs? I know I'm not getting this £9,000. I know I'm doing all the work and getting none of it. I feel like I'm at self-checkout of barbering. How much are you getting? What does an EPA cost me?
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, I'm Anthony Laban, and we're here with the Noble Barber Podcast Part 2 we're talking education, really. Obviously, with Emma McGay and Adam Sloan still. Just to kind of backtrack slightly into Part 1, we were talking about the kind of ownership of this knowledge, and I finished with us talking about how the spokes are broken and maybe everyone's not playing their part. We missed out a little bit, really, about the government action in this.
Yeah.
What's your feeling about, you know, we did speak a little bit about steering committees and move past them a little bit, possibly a little bit too quickly.
Yeah.
What's your feelings about that kind of our representation as an industry at these steering committees if one of us does turn up or some of us do turn up?
Well, I'd love you to be interviewing one of the IFA panel. You know, as I said to you, as we touched on in the first episode, that, you know, we do, the steering group, the industry experts are good, that are there, we do ask for, you know, can we have that extended? You know, it's a skills-based industry. Can we have 20 haircuts, or can we have, you know, 10 beard shapes, trims? And you are cut down no, because it has to fit the criteria. And so I do ask the questions, and other panel members ask the questions, and we get an emphatic no, it's got to be this. So it is very difficult going the step beyond Emma and myself, you know.
But that's not, and equally, you know, if you name the people we should be talking, if you talk to the organisations we should be talking to.
Well, it's IFA. You know, I think there will soon be Skills England. It'd be nice to get them in to explain to us.
If there's anyone out there, I'm very happy to invite you on. If you know anyone, please point this over to them. I think there is a loss, and that's what concerns me, why I wanted to come back over it. The word steering committee makes us feel like we have a voice, and if we turned up and spoke, we'd be listened to.
Yeah.
Blatantly, that's not the case.
No.
If you're being told no, what's the point?
I'd like to say that you have to have the opportunity. So having the opportunity, like you say, around the table. So City and Guilds, we're there with our assessment expertise primarily. Mm. So we're looking at, you know, qualification design, or what that could look like, what that standard could look like if there was a qualification involved, or, you know, if there's going to be an endpoint assessment, you know, what should that look like? What would be fair? What would be reliable in terms of assessment expertise? But the critical key people around the table really are those employers. So there's a range of employers, but how do we get more voices around the table, I think is certainly
if I may say, and I know you know this is true, CNG and VTCT and whatever other AO generally are not saying you're not welcome, but it is about employer engagement. And then we feed to you guys, yes, don't we? So CNG haven't got any teeth here, you know, and then when we're feeding to IFA, clearly we have none. You know, it's quite, picking up on what you said on the first half about maybe the standards should change. I agree with that. But we can only write what's put in front of us, what we're allowed to work with.
I think it would be really great to see, you know, and championing, you know, those consultations more, you know, so that actually we can try and capture the high street salon voices, the, you know, the real barbers, hairdressers, beauty therapists, any industry.
But a steering committee, what's the help? How many people get around the table? How many invites go out? How big a room do they have?
I mean, we're there, all of the awarding organisations, endpoint assessment organisations, we're there in the capacity of that assessment expertise, education expertise. I think, Adam, you're there in a sort of employer perspective.
Yeah, I'm an employer. I'm not there in any other, capacity. I'm an employer at that table.
But you're already saying that you're not being listened to, that you're asking for, well, for bare minimum. I would have thought 10 beard shapes is a bare minimum, and you're being told no.
All of the skills I'd like to see extended. Mm. That's what I'd like to see, because that's what puts bums on seats in barbershops.
But government or the education department are the ones that are saying no to you.
Yes.
So you're turning up, hasn't it? And that's what I'm saying. And back to more stick and not enough carrot. Being encouraged to give up your time for no purpose.
The head of the steering groups, Wendy and I think it's Caroline, they do try. Mm. They really do try. So the people heading it do try. But IFATE, it's like... computer says no.
Yeah.
So that I think we'd like to see change.
Yeah, I think for us, from an awarding organisation or endpoint assessment organisation perspective, we're very much there to drive what's realistic. What do you want to see in that endpoint assessment? Yeah. So once the employers have come together and had their discussions and shared their points, and there's lots of different working groups that come together. So we typically wouldn't be involved in those. What we would be involved in are the working groups around, okay, so this is everything that's been agreed. This is what the employers want, and what's been agreed in terms of the knowledge, the skills and the behaviours. What can we make that look like in terms of an endpoint assessment? And we also have to be realistic, because it comes with a cost. Mm. So the endpoint assessment should really be like a holistic approach to, I want to see this person in action. I want to see this person on a shop floor. I want to see this person doing the job. Are they competent, which is the baseline? Are they a pass, almost competency worthy? Or actually, are they really striving for excellence? Are they a distinction candidate as well? So for us, once the employers have agreed within themselves, what exactly needs to be contained within that standard, where we really can come in is, okay, but how are we going to assess that? What is that going to look like? I think absolutely we can have a week-long endpoint assessment. We'd capture absolutely everything, but it's not going to be realistic.
So, but for the EPAs, is that something that then you're paid by the training provider to do the EPA. So you're getting out of, I'd hate to go back to this £9,000, but we know it's £9,000. I know I'm not getting this £9,000. I know I'm doing all the work and getting none of it. I feel like I'm at self-checkout of barbering. I do all the work and all I do is get to carry the goods home.
So we have a teeny tiny bit of
it. What does an EPA cost me?
I would say on average about £500-ish pounds.
Okay, so £9,000, £500 goes to you.
So I think that's...
I think from my point of view, I think as an employer, if they make it through their apprentice or something like that, I think I get a £500 thank you, I think is what they get.
Well, for us though, don't forget, so we are employing somebody, a professional. Mm-hmm. So a professional, we will make sure, again, like I sort of was talking about earlier, making sure this person is competent, making sure this independent endpoint assessor is up to date, trends and behaviours. So they will come out to the place of choice. So the provider, and along with the employer, will choose where that endpoint assessment wants to take place. And because there can be like a sliding scale with that as well. So what we also offer, along with some of the other endpoint assessment organisations, is an option for the apprentice, the employer, the provider to decide whether they would like to have a one-to-one and pay slightly more, have a one-to-one assessment take place, or whether they'd like to have almost like a classroom scenario whereby you can have, I think it's a maximum of 5 apprentices at one time. So the more apprentices you have per independent endpoint assessor, the cheaper it becomes naturally.
Sure. Obviously, I come back to, there is still this, even if I kind of go with my nominal little tip that they give me in your payment of £500, there's £8,000. Who's deciding? And again, I'm not saying, I'm only knowing that you guys are talking to people that I don't. If there's £8,000 floating around from the government, why is that not shared 50-50 between the provider? Who's deciding that that all goes to provider? Because I used to have access to that many, many moons ago. When and why did that change?
Well, I know there used to be employers' incentives, didn't they?
Yes, for a new, taking on a new apprentice.
Getting back to training providers and businesses, that is, if you are genuinely doing 50% of the work, then you need to have a chat with them. That's how I would say. Most certainly our ones, the majority of them, we've got that trilogy. But, we've worked out, we get about £40-odd a day when we work out ours, because I have to give 35% to the direct contract and we're kind of subby. So, you need to talk to a training provider on that. I can't give answers to that.
But Okay, I'm not going to get too bogged down in that.
But no,
we had the conversation. We said that, but if we now
it's a great question.
If we go to another point, the other side of the people I'm talking to, I meet some that have been, and my issue with the colleges is I'm the ones that are most despondent when they come to me for a job tend to have come through the college. They tend to have gone through a local college and are disappointed with their quality of their training. I will ask them a very simple question. Over the time you've been at college, how many haircuts you've done? Some have barely made it out of single figures.
Scary. Okay?
So they're very disappointed. But again, they think of it as free because they're not paying for it.
Yes.
The government is paying the colleges that £9,000.
Yeah.
The same as everybody else. So they're the most disappointed. You then have the providers like the London School of Barbering or, Men's Spire or any of these courses. There's loads out there. I'm not picking on anyone. And they've done like 100 haircuts and they come with real enthusiasm and energy, but have an element of disappointment in what we're offering in the fact that we know they're not shop floor ready. Mm. They're more ready, but they're about to start, what would be a 3 to 6 month apprenticeship with us, if you like, where they're watching the other staff doing freebies, doing some models and gathering it up. But we're still getting that enthusiasm for them. But we now have this new brand, which is a very new one to me, which is I'm self-taught.
Oh, yes.
And to be honest with you, I'd struggle with some of them. If I was doing a blind taste test, I'd struggle to tell who's done a year at college and who's taught themselves in their shed. There's some real quality coming out there.
Yes.
They're crediting YouTube and Instagram. Yeah. And there are some amazing barbers out there doing some fantastic tutorials online. And some of it's free. Do you see that? And again, there's no qualification for that. So you're getting no qualification, but you can still get a job.
Mm.
So we then lead us into this kind of, we're not licensed, we're not regulated.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm a big supporter of the Hair and Barber Council. Mm. And remember I said it's like the Wild West? Well, they're the Texas Rangers with no bullets and guns.
Mm.
They try so hard. They really do. And, it's a voluntary act of Parliament, but it's not a mandatory.
Mm.
And, we get MH Fed, we get, I mean, literally, we were getting 100 emails a week about barbers complaining about the Turkish barbers can be fantastic. I'm not saying this, but the barbers that are just opening up and, clearly not qualified, tools aren't clean, et cetera, et cetera. And they're saying, it's putting me out of business. These are the six opened up. We get a lot of that, and it's,
But why is it voluntary? Why are we not? I mean, every single barbering company, we've been 70 episodes or something now, Luke, something like that, 65. More than 60. So we're 65. So I've met at least, 60 and some, so 70, 80 different barbering companies. We've been to Barber Connect, we've been to Salon International, we go all these floors, we chat to everybody. Every single person that I speak to wants us to be regulated.
Well, this is
what I get.
Every
single person I get.
I mean, Gareth Penn heads up. If you can get him on, he's a wonderful fella. And he's in charge of the Hair and Barber Council. And if you get him on, he's very passionate about it. It's just convincing the government.
We'll offer an invite now. I'm very happy to get him on. I'm really keen to have these conversations.
He's always trying to get the government to do it. But the government turned around and said, well, nobody's dying from it. So it's really difficult. Mm. It's a really difficult
thing. And who's going to police it? And
it's
very complex, isn't it, in its terms of the regulation. Obviously, for an awarding organisation, it would be wonderful to see, somebody who's got a regulated industry, everybody has to be formally regulated. And that's with an Ofqual regulated qualification because then it's, you're making sure. But then it's we've talked earlier about those sort of grandfather rights as well. Mm. Some people can be excellently trained and educated.
Yes, they do.
Through the sort of historical...
Yeah, but I mean, there have been other industries that have become regulated that will use historic skills. That I wouldn't necessarily need to go and do my MVQ3 to be qualified. Even bringing, even if it is a matter from a start point, we draw a line in the sand and from this point we bring in regulation. So, I mean, I've listened to every single argument, and I'm not, the one thing I haven't had is anyone turn around to me and say, I'm so glad we're not regulated.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad we're all a bunch of cowboys. I'm so glad anyone can open up. I'm so glad. Not one person said that. So does that, hating to give you a shoe in again, but does that start making your, the qualification less significant if people can train themselves on YouTube and open up their own store?
To be regulated, the government would want a standard.
Yes.
100%, 1,000,000%.
But we haven't got that. If we haven't got that, and we've got people that are training themselves in at home and turning that shed that they practiced into a home studio, and those studios are prolific. There's loads of them all over the place now. Are we starting to see the end of the qualification rather than... What, you know, hey, if we were regulated, then the birth of it, really, it would make it a whole different bag.
Well, I mean, everybody we engage with, salon-wise and barbershop-wise, insist on qualifications, insist on it. It's, you know, it's a minimum for us. It's the Wild West, Anthony. You know, when you have shops that are open up, we're based in Essex, Southend-on-Sea, and there are so many... barbershop. I mean, what boils my piss, to be honest, is that the government have just gone with 5,000 new tax inspectors to come after the businesses like yours and I, VAT-registered businesses, but they won't be looking at the guys that don't exist.
Yeah.
You know, so they're making it tougher for us to survive, in my opinion. So, you know, going forward, that's the elephant in the room. You know, there are shops that are open and the tools are filthy. I think I said it on the podcast before, I went to deliver some qualifications to a group of barbershops, and I went there on a Sunday, and of course, I must look like a copper. And I've gone in there with that, and they all ran out the back. I rung the owner. He'd seen me on camera, and he just said, yeah, they're kind of not.
They're not really here.
Yeah, not really here. It goes on. It goes on. And this is no slur on Turkish barbers, because they're and let's face it, they seem to be kind of the go-to barbershop. I was having a conversation that they you know, why are they busy? Because, you know, people want to go to them. But certainly, you know, if you had some sort of regulatory body, if you remove the standards, then it's vacuous, isn't it, for me? You know,
that's kind of my point, though. I think we have removed the standards. You know, that's what the high streets. That's why the high streets so. The barbers on the high street is so prolific. The home guys, all the guys under the radar, are unregulated, are untrained, are unqualified. Presumably, we're seeing all these problems with. You know, I know the online press has made a big deal about ringworm and so on, but we're certainly seeing from, you know, kind of foil clippers and the lack of knowledge of cleaning and cleanliness, that we're seeing a rising ringworm like I've never seen in my whole time in the industry. So, you know, this is all coming from people who aren't qualified, haven't got that piece of paper, haven't got their MVQ or their City and Guilds or their VCTC or whatever. Whatever bit of paper they're meant to be waving, they haven't got it. But they can open up on the high street. There are guys that are just like, you know what, I don't like booking online. I don't like putting my cards in. I only want the back and side short.
Yes.
I want a number one all over. £8 what I want to pay or whatever it is. There's a customer base out there, which is fine.
Absolutely.
You know, no one's going to come into me and want an £8 haircut. That's fine. There's a load of places that you do it. My whole argument is that we should all have a base minimum standard.
Yes, absolutely.
If we choose, as I do, to rise way above any standard I can think of, that's my choice.
Yes.
But there should be a base minimum standard.
It's a baseline.
Standard.
It's a recognition of a baseline competency. And I think, you know, we see at City and Guilds, we operate across many, many industries from, you know, construction, engineering, transport, travel to hair and beauty. And actually it's the hair, the barbers, the beauty therapists. We see the majority of people wanting a qualification. They want a formally recognised qualification. It's one of the biggest industry areas. So when they introduced the apprenticeship standard, and actually as part of the on-programme journey, there was a choice. Is there a mandatory or non-mandatory on-programme qualification desired, wanted, needed by predominantly the parents and the guardians and the carers and the young people or the people who are wanting to achieve this apprenticeship standard? So actually, interestingly, hair, beauty, barbering, hiring all went with mandatory qualifications as part of that on-program journey, not just because they want to evidence that knowledge, skill, behaviour, achievement to work on the high street or in this particular part of the country, but actually that international recognition as well. You know, people, the opportunities that unlocks to have an internationally recognised qualification, it's almost a stamp to say, yes, you know, these are your capabilities, your competences, and they've been recognised at this level. Yep. Then what you add to that is your CV, is just continual professional development. And that's where you're going to see people really excel or not, you know, stay at that baseline competency. So particularly as an awarding organisation, we see a real drive continually for a formal qualification of recognition rather than, like you say, just that self-taught. And lots of that self-talk can be fantastic. You know, the social media channels are so engaging. There's so much, there's so many different ways to learn now, but that coupled with a formal qualification unlocks more opportunities.
Yeah, no, I mean, I said previously, you know, the young people I meet now that are coming to us are incredible because they've been watching they've been watching YouTube videos since they were like 13. Yes. They come to me at 16, 17, and I'm like, I wish I'd had a tenth of their natural talent when I was, you know, I turned up and was like, oh, you know, I managed to get a gig and that was it.
And the access to that is just amazing, isn't it? What they can see and who they follow and what they watch. I mean, there's some dodgy stuff out there by all means and stuff you probably don't want them to look at.
Do you see, taking the EPA across other industries, does the barbering seem different to a bricklaying EPA? Can you see from your point of view that when you're with something that's creative, it doesn't work. You can't stack it up against, that's a nice wall, it's not going to fall over, that's great.
It's interesting because you still, they're so valuable in all of the different industries because you're demonstrating you can do the job. And that's what makes endpoint assessment really special. So whether you're working on in a care home or, you know, on a ward or whether you're working in a dentist or, like you say, building a wall, the whole point of the endpoint assessment is to really demonstrate that competency. I can do the job. Can I just do the job and meet the sort of the threshold competency, or can I do it incredibly well? And those learners, your distinction kind of learners, are the ones that will really shine for that. So having that recognition as well. So we see it working.
I'm only going to hark back on this because I know if I miss I'm going to get questioned, and I want to know the answer myself. As a provider, the providers that you're using and that you're engaging with, how trained are their people? How good at shaving are their educators? How good a haircutter is that educator? How good?
Well, we're a subcontractor, so they'll work for me.
Well, no, but that's I'm asking that question. No, it's just like, what's the quality of it, and what's the quality checking of? Am I being trained by, you know, an idiot showing my youngsters how to shave and how to trim a beard, or am I being trained by like one of my guys who do it day in, day out, and who are magnificent?
And don't forget, that's where the learning predominantly comes from. So if you're an apprentice, you're in the barbershop, you know, how many, 4 or 5
days a
week.
Not if you're a full-time student.
That's a full-time education.
You're still engaging with that learning process.
So two very different types of learning. So you've got the apprentice who's going to do an endpoint assessment. So they're working in industry, they're learning, you know, doing the job. You've then got a learner in full-time education. So they're coming out with a vocationally relevant style of qualification. Mm. So the recognition at the end of it, they're not doing an endpoint assessment.
But would those end up becoming educators at a
To become an educator, you've got to be working in industry as well. So you can't, you couldn't just do a qualification and then go into education. So I taught myself beauty therapy. So I finished my qualification in full-time education learning. I then went out to become a beauty therapist. I owned my own salon. I worked in a couple of different spas. Mm. I then discovered the world of teaching because I had the experience.
But presumably there's a training process you go through.
Yes, so I was competently, you know, in my field of work. So, you know, from being a salon owner to being a therapist myself.
When you did that, the other people that you were on the course with were of equal pedigree to you.
Yes.
Or were some that you just think, how did you get on this course?
No.
Because that's how it seems to me. I meet some people, I'm like, really?
And there's not just a course for the beauty therapists or the hairdressers that want to become teachers. When you start in your assessor's awards or your teacher training degrees, things like that, you're teaching and learning courses, it's an incredibly exciting time because you're in the classroom with the person that wants to be the bricklaying lecturer or the person that wants to be a dental hygienist lecturer or the business studies lecturer. So you're learning about teaching and learning principles and theories rather than me being a beauty therapist. Mm. What happens with that is you go to the centre and they're going to appoint you then as the assessor based on your capabilities and your professional. So it's coupled with your professional expertise with your teaching and learning sort of abilities as well. So it's a very unique position to have. And I believe it's a very prestigious position.
Is that your feelings? I mean, you know where I'm sitting. And obviously you're sitting in a very different spot.
Yeah, I mean,
where do you find yourself?
Well, we are fortunate. We've got two assessors. One, Chris Musket, who went to India with you, guy in Japan for City and Guild. Fantastic shaver, great assessor. And we've got a guy called Ben Clifford Stevenson, who won the Apprentice Barber of the Year with the City and Guild. And then he went on to win the Barber of the Year. And this was a guy that was working, he was a manager in a health club, like swimming pool. And that guy, so we've got two great educators. Once a month, the Mustache Barber, seems a lovely guy. He was talking about London School of Barbering, having guest artists. Well, we had Wes Jones last month. We've got Junior next month for HD Cuts. Well, he's a junior at Dialer Cuts. And then we've got Dean Gleason, who's the Wild Artistic Director, coming in next month. So we try and engage. Mm. And we have groups of 12 with two tutors. Mm. So that's how we do it.
I mean, my experience of that, and hey, you know, what a great roll call, but my experience is not that.
No.
And so if we're talking about how many...
That's why I'm busy.
How many, across the country, how many centres are there training?
Hundreds.
Yeah, okay. So if we just say a nominal 500 that are these training centres across the entire breadth of the United Kingdom and Ireland, I still feel you'd be the minority in that. I still feel those brilliant ones that are engaging, that are getting the Wes Crowe, getting Dean and getting these amazing people to come involved. You know, I know that Captain Fawcett, lovely Richie,
and with Sid
does fantastic things with the local, you know. So I know it happens out there. I just think it's the exception, not the rule, that actually what we're doing is letting down an awful lot of young people who are really keen and enthusiastic to come into the industry. And they're just getting turned over or bored, or they're having that passion drained. And then, which is where I want to get to next, then they're turning up with us and wanting to go forward. So what's your feeling at that point as an apprentice that have got your qualification? Mm-hmm. What should they be expecting? That they've done their EPA, they've worked where they're working, they've come out of a full-time course, whichever way they've done, but they've got their City and Guilds. And they're turning up at barbershops trying to get a job, and they're finding it really hard because they're not shop floor ready. What's your
my experiences are the barbers are taking them on self employed and they're earning bugger all these kids because I don't think many will take them on. A lot of barbershops we work with organically grow them.
Yeah,
So it's got to be tough for kids leaving college. I can't answer that. It looks to me when I look out in the Wild West that these people are taking on as self-employed.
Yeah, I don't think there's much care after that. They come out with this qualification and they're kind of thrown sort of wolves. And at that point, I wonder how much good that qualification's done them.
Well,
if they meet me or companies like me and there's loads of us out there, I'm really am.
You know, sorry to interject. I would hope that the colleges have engaged with barbers, like you were saying about that fantastic college.
Absolutely.
That have barber breakfast. So hopefully that's what they should be doing. I'm not in the college environment. Mm. You know, I write standards and I love working with C&G, but I don't run colleges. We're apprentices primarily. Mm. So I would hope that they're engaging. Hugely embarrassed by what I said to you. You know, we fed that at the meeting, didn't we? Pretty shocking that they didn't engage with you, to be honest. I don't think I'm qualified enough to comment on that. Yeah. I would hope that they are engaging with that. Can we check? It's West Suffolk College, you were saying, isn't it?
Fantastic example. Absolutely fantastic example, you know, of excellent employer engagement. Yeah, and that happens a lot across the country.
They work with a fellowship as well, so Barry Stevens as well, and they've got a graduate program for them? So that type of college is the one. Belfast Met, you know, fantastic colleges. You know, they are out there. Mm. These are just people I've worked alongside.
But you know, they're still producing these people who, you know, even the really brilliant ones, even if they've been with you and they've had the opportunities to work with people like Wes and with Dean and they've done all these great things, or they've been, you know, they're up in Norfolk and they've managed to work with Sid Sotong or any of these guys. They've had this experience. They still got to get shop floor ready. Yeah. They've still got to arrive. And they're, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, wet behind the ears, or, you know, or inexperienced or intimidated or whatever it is. They need to round their skills. You know, I like to think of them slightly more as a not quite polished diamond yet. You know? So they just need that polishing off. Yeah. But there is work to be done. Yes. And I find it's quite hard with some to explain that. That we're, you know, I employ, so it would be taking them on as a job. But we're very aware that who we're taking on wants to improve with us. And I've had this conversation with others that they want to improve with us for a few months, and then they're going to bugger off down the road and get a chair rental And again, this, back to the trilogy, back to the three spokes, the spoke that's broken is there's not a great incentive at that point for the barber shop to make that extra investment. You know, I've got this guy, he's 20, he's done his training, he's done this, he's worked with you up yours, and it's all been great. He's got a lot of raw skill. I need to work with him for 3 or 4 months. That you're left on that precarious bit that I'll invest, I'm paying your wages, and even on a minimum wage, a 20-year-old's going to cost you, you know, what, 80-odd quid a day, you know, rising up to 100 quid.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so if you've got them there 3-4 days a week even to improve, it's still costing you £300-400. You're getting nothing back. They're doing free haircuts or £5 haircut or whatever. Yeah. There's nothing to keep them after that. They can then immediately disappear to all these chair rentals who are desperately trying to get it. Yeah. So that spoke's broken.
Yeah. So I guess the best learners, you know, and the best colleges doing that are having the learner, whether in full-time education, I mean, predominantly really because the apprentice is already working, doing that work experience alongside their program.
Yeah.
So those learners are going to have success. And that's what we would hope, you know, is actively encouraged. So they're not coming from just, you know, studying at college 3-4 days a week for the year and coming out, you know, just literally never been into a barbershop ever before. Again, you know, engaging where you can with those really proactive centres about saying, you know, come to me for work experience one day a week, you know, put into practice what you're learning, so that actually the employer can then have that, you know, mould them, shape them as part of that learning journey as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can, because we have lots of people applying, you know, can you get us an apprenticeship? And Colchester is full of barbershops.
Yeah.
So I took myself and a colleague and we walked up and down. And we're talking about maybe 30 barbershops, asking all of them, would they be willing to take an apprentice? Because we've got a candidate that we can work with you and them. Nobody wanted them.
Mm.
It's full of barbershops. Anybody who's gone to Colchester, full of them. And we couldn't get one employer that was interested in taking an apprentice on. So it's difficult. We get lots of applications and we won't take them on unless we've got something for them.
No, but that's the real difficult bit. I do find it's really, really hard. And there isn't an incentive. You know, this is the bit. There isn't an incentive for it. There's no, I mean, I don't know. I don't do chair rental, but if I had a chair rental operation, can you employ apprentices? How does that work? I mean, I realise there's not an incentive to, but can you? Yeah, we're talking about an industry that's now at least 80% chair rental.
I mean, my understanding is, you know, you need to be able to employ that person. They have employment rights, it has to be on payroll, they have to have a contract.
Yeah.
So I don't believe that would work, but I think that would come from a provider directly perspective.
So, you know, you'll be, so if you employ no one and you decide, okay, we're going to do this, everyone's chair rental, I'm going to put everyone's chair rental up by a tenner and that's going to chip in, or however you do it, if that's possible, you're then left paying for this year £12,000 a year. You've taken on a £12,000 debt or for someone to work in your store 4 days a week, because obviously you're still paying them for the day there at college.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see where that. So, this is the problem. I'm laughing just because I'm utterly bewildered by the fact.
Do you know, there's a little fact that I was in my office before I left and I spoke to Victoria, the girl that runs it for us. We've got 15 emails from school kids that are leaving, all desperate to come and get apprenticeships. And, you know, and they all look like really good candidates, all of them. And, you know, where do we put them?
Yeah.
Do you know? it's such a difficult
thing. That's the problem. That's what breaks my heart.
Because let's face it, well, the way things are, you know how difficult it is running your stores, and I'm the same. It's one of those that you where do we put them? Can't really afford them in it, can we?
Yeah.
And that is a major problem.
Yeah. And this is where we seem to have got to in the industry now. We've got,
and just as you said, there's so many people want to come in this industry still.
I don't know why we can't react faster and better to this. You know, I mean, I think the plain and simple factor is it's just too expensive.
Yeah, I agree. But also, you know, I sit very proudly with a British Air Consortium, and they're really good with their data. And we look like the fastest growing industry, barbering. You know, there's, you know, hairdressing is declining, shops are declining. And so this is official data. But the reality is they're probably two-man shops. You know, and they can't afford to take them on. So it's a bit of a lie. It's making us look like we're buoyant and we're flying, but that's not the truth, is it? You know, there's so many barbershops that are running it with employed people that are on the floor.
Mm.
You just can't afford to take them.
No, it's incredibly difficult.
But yet the perception is we are flying as an industry. And it is a cool industry. It's a fantastic industry. Yeah.
But, you know, we're for the first time in a long time, I see that you've got this huge energy and enthusiasm of people wanting to come into it. And unfortunately, the appealing route in is practicing at home, doing it through Instagram, doing it through online. That is the appeal. As far as I can see.
So would they develop them soft skills that way, which are really important, as you know?
I don't know. I mean, I've met some brilliant people. I mean, certainly, you know, you were talking about Liam there, the moustache, and he definitely developed all his soft skills prior to becoming a barber.
I mean, a really talented lad. You know, you can see that.
And so, you know, I think when you meet people who are older that are coming into it as a second, third career, they've generally got all those skills. What they're wanting is that jump in between.
Mm. Yeah.
The problem we have, I believe, is that the incentive to train has gone. The incentive for a barbershop to train has gone because we're absolutely convinced they're only going to jog on and go and do a chair rental up the road.
Yes.
We've got 80% of our industry is now chair rental. And I'm not against chair rental. Loads of my mates do it. I think it's absolutely fine and dandy. That's what you want to do. My model's different and I've chosen that route. And I'm probably too long in the tooth to change it now, but 80% just doesn't add up. You can't survive with 20% of the 20% of the industry
so
training for the 100.
That's how you're tough. The training providers will go with them sort of stats. And I think you agree with me. All my staff and Joe's are all employed because you've got a brand then, haven't you?
Mm.
You know, we did try it once upon a time and people turned up when they liked and we didn't have that, like Begins My Company. And we are a great brand. We've been doing 47 years. We've got getting into a sixth generation of families that come to us. So I find it really important to have a brand, you know, as you have. And that's something that really scares me about the self-employed route, you know.
I think there are quite a lot of hybrid companies that work it well. Some are employed, some aren't, and I think that's maybe a stepping stone between that you can utilize apprentices. But I do think, I personally think, at the moment we're on the kind of cliff edge of the death of the apprentice, and I really do for our industry.
I mean,
certainly, I think hairdressing will survive. I think I think probably because there's a practice of. Hairdressers will normally have a receptionist, they'll have backwash, they'll have hair washing, they'll have colour, they'll have other aspects that apprentices can get involved in during their qualifying period. We certainly see that without. You know, with barbershop, there's not a lot they can do. There's not a lot they're really bringing as an extra service other than trying to get them trained.
But we're seeing the rise of the barber apprentice volumes slowly
My problem is, what we've got is you've got, you know, your jar is overflowing.
Yes.
The problem is there's not a big dish underneath it to catch everything that's flowing over. We're producing these people who have a qualification. We're just not producing barbers of tomorrow.
Are you talking about apprentices?
Yes.
So they will be the barbers. Smokes. They're already placed somewhere.
There's going to be a place for the education piece because I think, you know, watching social media, self-taught, I think Adam, you alluded to earlier, you know, that gives you the skill to be able to copy something. Yeah. It's not until really you're exploring the different types of people, the different environments, that you build those soft skills.
I think the really social media is fantastic for picking up those tips. But as you know, when you're watching that video, you haven't got somebody saying you're standing in the wrong position.
Yeah.
You know, if you follow that all the way around, you're going to be half an inch out the other side. Mm. So, and some of the guys, I mean, Josh is somebody very near and dear to me. You know, you watch all his videos, they don't show you the whole haircut. Mm. They'll kind of gloss over the tricky bits.
And the safety aspects of that. Yeah. You know, what a qualification brings or formal education brings, isn't it? Like you said earlier, Anthony, it's very much around the health and safety aspects, the understanding, the why and the how. If I cut the skin, this could be, you know, the precautions that I need to take to protect myself and the person with that.
I mean, just going back to regulations, I feel the people who could get us regulated are our customers. Because they all assume, believe me, they all assume we're qualified. You know, when I tell them that it's not a regulated industry, and, you know, they just assume that everybody that works within our group are qualified, which they are. But so that, you know, the public could be, because the government aren't interested really, because they come down the health and safety route and nobody dies, nobody this, no that. And the ringworm was a ripple, really, wasn't it? The government really didn't take any notice of it.
So, not wishing to cut you off, but I'm just wanting to make sure I cover this, which is really how you see and feel about the future. We started with the future of the apprenticeship. Let's finish with the future of barbering education.
Yes.
Because, you know, I mean, my view is I think it's time to adapt or die. I do feel that there's a point where it's fractioning, it's splitting and it's moving. You know, with the demand for the kind of traditional barbering disappearing, that we're not seeing quite so many people wanting to do that full apprenticeship, or as you said with your mate, your son's lad, you know, getting the apprenticeship, getting a space, that they're learning it other way. Do we need to start looking at other aspects of men's grooming, that we're looking at maybe like skincare, or hey, a bit of hair loss, scalp tattoo, you know, the pigmentation, and even teaching kind of content creation that we're changing. You know, one, I'm still unsure that the curriculum covers barbering skills clearly enough. But do you think that the government will be more likely to add new skills like tattooing they would come back and look at, actually, they need to do 20 haircuts? This is where I think the do or die aspect of barber education is going to go.
So we saw the introduction of that social media piece, that knowledge of how best to use social media. I think it's social media awareness, when the standard for level 2 barber was recently revised and sort of authorised back in May 2023. So for the first time, actually, we've seen that formal recognition of actually the importance of just starting to explore and understand social media alongside actually well-being of themselves and others, which is really, really great. You know, that's been formalised as part of that apprenticeship's sort of journey. But absolutely, only at the moment, currently the steering group are revising the level 3 advanced creative hair professional standard. So there's very much a call to action around employers, stakeholders in the industry to have a voice. What should that look like? So you've got the level 2, you've got the level 2 barbering professional standard that's got all of your foundation. Yeah. It's got everything really the average barber's going to need to be successful working in the barbershop. What do they progress on to is everything that you're just talking about there. So do we then start to introduce potentially some skincare, hair care, understanding sort of hair loss, you know, what can be resolved around all of those different things? So again, it comes back to our conversation around having a voice as part of those steering groups. And I think that's really important that we explore better how can people access those consultations, those different groups, to be able to have a voice.
To be fair to say, the pickup on level 3 is quite low.
Yes.
In the barbering world.
Yes. Because that competency sits at level 2, that work readiness, that being able to work, operate, earn money, get a job as a barber or a hairdresser at level 2. Level 3 is very much those advanced skills. So wanting to take it further. So
I personally think that the barbers will dictate where we're going.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope that's the case.
Because if they don't take apprentices on, then that's where it's going. So.
Well, I think that's. You know, I think we've seen turkeys voting for Christmas recently and previously, so that may happen. I mean, I still have these concerns that, you know, with the thousands of barbers that are being qualified every year, that actually what we're finding, which really upsets me, is that I'm going to meet people who are like, oh, yeah, I used to be a barber, and barber will be, you know, their barber will be there first, and they'll only be doing barbering for a year or two. I tried it, but I couldn't make it work because there's just, there doesn't seem, we don't seem to have adapted to that next stage of getting these guys through to the shop floor. And a lot of these guys don't want to do, certainly on a second career, can't or don't want to do a full apprenticeship. You can't get the gig because someone over 20 learning is going to cost you even, you know, nearer, we were talking, it's going to cost you nearer £25,000 when you've got someone over 25 on a training process. So it does concern me that it's going to become a bit of a, we're training people up or qualifying people for a bit of a disposable career. That brings us to the end of part two. Time does fly.
God,
I don't know what happened. I had so many more. I did get through most of my cards, I think, so thank you very much. We've got a few points that came up that the steering committee, we want to invite someone, someone from government.
Government.
We want someone from government to come on. We're Gareth very keen Penn. On that. Gareth.
Penn.
Gareth Penn, please. That would be really lovely.
Barber Council.
From the Barber Council. So there's a few options out there. I'd love to hear back from you guys about whether the apprenticeship is in trouble, whether you would take on an apprentice. How is your relationship with your local provider? Do you feel as disappointed as I do in the way they're getting all the funding for none of the training? That's a personal thought, which I try very hard not to have. Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your views of what you were here for. I hope we've got that across. Thank you very much. I'm Anthony Laban, and I've been the Noble Barber. Thank you.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.